Ryan Murphy and his collaborators are responsible for everything from Glee to American Horror Story. And now they've made their first project for Netflix. Called The Politician, it follows Peyton Hobart, a high school student determined to be president of the student body and one day the United States.
Murphy has gathered another of his impressive casts: Ben Platt, Gwyneth Paltrow, Bob Balaban, Bette Midler, and of course, Jessica Lange. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we're talking about The Politician. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair today, we're always delighted to have with us NPR Music's Lindsay McKenna. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, everyone.
It's so good to have you. If you are not familiar, as we said, this is high school set. Ben Platt is the main character. You might know him from Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway, for which he won an Tony, or from the Pitch Perfect movies, where he was the weird friend.
Yep.
Glenn, talk to me about how you responded to The Politician.
Well, let's get the boring critique, the go-to critique, the dull critique out of the way. This thing is 8 episodes, should have been 6. That's the classic Netflix critique. There's a little bloat in the middle, but I went into this thing thinking the show was going to be a lot more acidic than it turned out to be, a lot sharper, political satire, politics is like high school. I thought that was going to be kind of working at that level at sort of a cutthroat intensity, and it was kind of sweet. There is the usual Ryan Murphy and co tonal wobble, but I do think this is a little bit more tightly controlled. So much of this seemed to want to break out into being a kind of overt cartoon, but they kind of, in most cases, Jessica Lange being a notable exception. They kind of kept it kind of bubbling at a constant simmer instead of boiling over. Ben Platt, particularly in the early going, plays Peyton, the main character, with this really passion that keeps contorting his body. He has these really funny gestures that kind of go away. But I thought they worked great because in the beginning, you're contrasting him with this passion that racks his body with David Corenswet as his rival slash friend slash something else named River, who radiates this kind of very low-key. It's not intensity. It's just a stillness, a very charismatic stillness. He's amused by Peyton in a way that other people don't seem to be. I want to give a particular shout-out to Benjamin Barrett as Ricardo, who's kind of bringing you this kind of dirtbag Justin Long energy as the boyfriend.
He sure is.
If Jason Mendoza on The Good Place weren't so brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. But even his dumbness, he's playing really dumb, but he's playing dumb very smartly.
Yeah.
It's not a cartoon. It's pretty broad, but I do not think the women got the same layers that the men on the show did. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that a little bit more. But yeah, I dug it, and I'm really interested in the next season.
Yeah, and Glenn, it's interesting what you say about Ben Platt, because if you had seen him in Dear Evan Hansen, I think you would recognize this kind of very intense and odd physicality that he brings to this part is different from but related to the very physical performance that he gave in that show as somebody with kind of debilitating anxiety.
Right.
Lindsay, what did you think, The Politician?
All right, so there's this line. It comes maybe in episode 5 or 6 that Infinity says, and she's asked about what will satisfy her. Infinity being one of the characters, she's one of the vice presidential candidates on one of the tickets. You know, she's asked, what do you want? And she says, all the pistachio and framboise macarons I can eat. And to me, that line is actually a pretty accurate description of the tone of the show. I think you see a lot of brightness across it. There's excess because, again, this is Ryan Murphy. So you've got all these signifiers of wealth. Any excuse to put Gwyneth Paltrow in equestrian attire is great by me. You've got also Ben Platt's girlfriend's character, Alice, dressed kind of like the Jackie O buttoned up first lady that she aspires to be. However, with all of that macaron sweetness, it falls flat for me in a couple of ways just because it feels so uneven. Some plot lines tend to work better than others, and I'm someone who kind of grew up on the OC type of soap opera teen dramas, and I could do with 3 fewer plot lines. There are too many smushed in there. The thing about this, too, is that with Netflix freeing Ryan Murphy from sort of the limitations that you see on network and cable episodic television, he takes a couple of risks, one of them being playing with the runtime of some of the episodes, and one in the middle is shorter, but it doesn't pay off for me because of some of the limitations of the characters in it. the structure of the season, also knowing in advance that Ryan Murphy was given sort of this like huge bankroll with Netflix, that there was going to be a second season, that this was greenlit with two seasons mm-hmm. in mind at least, mm-hmm. really set this expectation for me as a viewer. And I think a lot of times when you think about Netflix, you're thinking about the business model. So for me, sort of the litmus test as a viewer is, do I want to keep watching? That Netflix makes it really easy, that there are no barriers to continuing to watch. That is how it as a business model functionally works. Cynically, we know that they only care about your impulse to continue. They don't really care about you as an active viewer. It's not about engagement on the page. This is me as a social media strategist thinking about those things. And in that case, does this work as a snow day viewing? Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, mm-hmm. I want my macarons on the couch, hot cocoa. Does it work as something that I'm really engaging with, like, in a meaningful way, other than looking at the beautiful set design and thinking about these characters as sort of like archetypes? Not necessarily.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned the structure of the season, because one of the things that that I noticed about it, that I think anybody would notice about it, is that it's basically seven episodes of one season and then the first episode of what will be next season, more than any other show I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. There's essentially a hard break between those first seven and that last one, to the point where, you know, you're going to start watching this series and think, well, where's Bette Midler? Where's Judith Light? Right. They were in all of the promo stuff. Well, they're in that last episode because really they're in next season.
Yeah.
I think it is a very unusual structure in that way. Stephen, what did you think?
I agree with Lindsay with so much of what you're saying. This show is so wildly inconsistent from episode to episode, from character to character. Characters are acting in one show here and another show here, and Jessica Lange is making those big, bold acting choices. Tonally, this is everywhere. I mean, I think I've been hanging out with you guys long enough that when I hear the name Ryan Murphy, the phrase that pops into my head is off the rails.
Yeah.
And I think, Glenn, you are a big user of the term off the rails when talking about the work of Ryan Murphy. And
sure.
This thing is wobbling all over the rails for the first few episodes. And for me, about episode six, it just flies off them entirely. And it takes kind of until episode eight to get anywhere that I'm kind of coming to care about again.
Uh-huh.
We haven't yet really talked about the fact that virtually none of these characters are likable. And Lord knows, you can build a very successful TV franchise around unlikable characters who are interested in power.
Succession.
That, in case you weren't sure what I was getting at, it's not just like I didn't care like mm-hmm. what happened in these elections or what happened to these people. I just really struggled to find stuff to latch onto. And because this show is just pivoting all over the place, it didn't even necessarily feel like a coherent plot to me. It does have their little performances and ideas that I like. It builds up these interesting themes about authenticity. Like, the very first conversation in the show is about kind of the presentation of affection, and mm-hmm. like that, and that's a really interesting kind of recurring theme through the show, is about what happens to people's authentic selves when they are running for office. It has interesting ideas, but it's just throwing so much at you that as a whole, I was just never really able to embrace it.
The reason I use the term tonal wobble and not off the rails for this show is because in my head, I realize now I'm grading on a curve. I'm comparing it to things like American Horror Story,
right,
which goes wildly off the rails every single season. You can just pinpoint it. This felt a little bit more controlled to me, but maybe that's just a question of the collapsed time. You know, there's this, mm-hmm. this the eight episodes as opposed to the 12 or 20.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting what Stephen was talking about with there being kind of nothing to latch onto. I had that same feeling. And in the end, what I wound up seeing in this show is Ryan Murphy kind of working as a person with an aesthetic and mm-hmm. with a look and feel that he really likes to play with and that I think he's very good at. I think starting from even like there's a credit sequence at the beginning that uses a Sufjan Stevens song and has this very elaborate sequence about how you sort of what the show is about, which is it's a visual representation of what it means to kind of create a person, a politician. I appreciate that because so few shows have a beautiful credit sequence anymore. Mm-hmm. They've been sliced out of so many shows. I very much admire the stylishness of this show, despite the fact that it seems to me to draw heavily from Wes Anderson.
Yep.
It has a kind of like a dry as a wafer Wes Anderson-ness.
The music cues are very Wes Anderson.
The music cues are, you get Gwyneth Paltrow as, you know, a part of this wealthy family that kind of is all floating free of each other. I think a lot of the way it's shot is that kind of Wes Anderson diorama thing. Very, you know, a lot of centered compositions and things like that. And it's not that Wes Anderson's the only person to do that. It's just that when you add everything up, it feels to me like Ryan Murphy working within a kind of a Wes Anderson-ish model. But with that said, I think the colors of this thing are beautiful. I think the style of it is gorgeous.
I'm glad that you guys brought up the music, because to me that was one of the biggest disconnects of the show. And no disrespect to Ben Platt, who I think is doing a lot of great work in this. And he's obviously so gifted. But I don't think I needed the musical theater element to this show.
Oh,
that
okay.
There are a couple, I know.
We're gonna throw down.
I know. So I get it. I get excess. I get over the top. But I think when you try and put all of those different styles into one really short run, I didn't know what my expectations should be. I think that there's a lot of this that attempts to be subversive without actually undermining what it's pointing out. And I think using high school archetypes to point at that, which then kind of pivot to this broader like critique on politics, it didn't pay off for me always.
Yeah.
And I also thought some of the other musical reference points almost felt a little too showy, not telly. I felt like I didn't need the same sort of Wes Anderson type reference points to really drive it home to me.
Yeah,
counterpoint regarding musical theater from Mr. Weldon.
It's a good point about showing, not telling, because, I mean, Ryan Murphy is in show business.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
To me, the constant use of Ben Platt singing and some of his other cast members singing is simply an ROI thing. It's like, if you cast Ben Platt,
right. What
the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Also, at the end of the day, I mean, I had the exact opposite reaction. At the end of the day, this show is primarily a vector to get a better than average version of Unworthy of Your Love in front of my eyeballs and my ears, which is a beautiful song that just doesn't get, it's not a standard like the other Sondheim numbers. And just having it be sung very well was like, yep, yeah. I'm enjoying this.
I have to tell you, when I had reviewed this and when I was starting to tell people like this is about to come out, whatever, one of the first things somebody asked me on Twitter was, does he sing?
Yeah.
And I think Ben Platt is very, very beloved by a particular mm-hmm. segment that I think they badly want to get with this show. And I think that to get that segment, I think...
Yeah. You have to find a way to shoehorn in him.
And I don't think it always feels shoehorned. I think that... Once you acknowledge that this kid is the overachiever,
right.
I want to be good at everything and get a slice of everybody's affection, it makes sense that he would be a performer on top of
exactly.
everything else.
Exactly. There's a theater kid circle and there's a student council circle, and they kind of tend to overlap.
But it's wanted
true.
It all the way. That
yeah.
To me, it was either like make him kind of recur throughout like Glee, like give me a song in every single episode.
Right.
Or give me, you know, like... just one or two.
And in all these eight episodes, we should have had time for both Lucy Boynton as Peyton's rival Astrid and Julia Schlepfer as his girlfriend Alice to move beyond mere affect. Both of them kind of presented you with affect first, with persona first, and didn't
yeah.
get beyond persona. Astrid at one point makes a very surprising decision that I did not see coming, but then once we get a chance to spend a little bit more time with her in that decision, I still didn't understand where it came from.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that character was built out nearly as much as a lot of the other attention is given to.
No, I don't think she's
especially if the theme of sort of ambition versus emotion is what we're trying to draw out in Peyton's character. We
mm-hmm.
don't afford that same opportunity to the women of the show at all. And there are a lot of really compelling women characters and non-binary characters. And so much of that is sort of like tossed aside. I don't get enough soapiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say we have found a lot to talk about this show, which is what I said about it when we started talking about covering it. I think there's just a lot of fun stuff to talk about. And I will be very curious to hear what all of you think about The Politician. If you've had a chance to watch it, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Hello Products. Hello Products thinks it's time personal care was actually personal and as natural as they can make it. Hello Naturally Friendly Oral Care makes toothpaste, mouthwash, floss, and more that's vegan and cruelty-free. It's also free from artificial sweeteners and flavors, dyes, SLS, peroxide, and gluten. Score 10% off your first one-time purchase at HelloProducts.com using promo code HELLOPOP.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
This past weekend, I got to go to the ACL Festival in Austin, Texas, where they actually bust in suns from other solar systems to beam down on an outdoor field in 95 to 97 degree heat. I actually greatly enjoyed the festival, enjoyed working with our pals at KUTX in Austin, and got to interview several people on a new stage that they had built up for this year's festival called the Bonus Track Stage, which is designed to be sort of a podcast stage, an interview stage, an opportunity to not just have like Guns N' Roses, playing a 2.5 hour set in front of Jumbotrons, but a chance to have kind of conversations in an outdoor
setting.
So
you didn't play your guitar.
Did not play my guitar. Nobody played a guitar at this stage. And I got a chance to interview Nilufer Yanya, a wonderful singer-songwriter, Jenny Lewis, who is a national treasure and was an absolute delight, and an actual young, scrappy, but not exactly up-and-comer, Billie Eilish. The pop megastar who gave the world Bad Guy, among other things. And so I got to do these interviews. The Billie Eilish interview we're running on the All Songs Considered feed, so you can actually experience the weird juxtaposition between your old buddy Steven and a gigantic, gigantic star, and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who were like 3 feet away from us screaming, "I love you," at her, not me. The ACL Festival is coming back this weekend. If you happen to be in Austin, it is not going to be 97 degrees. I highly recommend it.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Strange Loop is a musical that had its world premiere in New York this summer. It ran May through July. I didn't get a chance to see it, but the original cast recording was just released at the end of September. It's a very meta, very recursive show about a fat, black, queer man named Usher, who is an usher at the Lion King. And he is writing a musical about a fat, black, queer man named Usher, who is an usher at the Lion King. One more level, it's written by Michael R. Jackson, who was an usher at the Lion King. So Usher, played by Larry Owen, spends the evening singing with and against his thoughts, which are personified by six different actors, two of whom kind of slowly over the course of the evening become his mother and father. Along the way, it gets in some very good digs at the unbearable whiteness of Broadway audiences, and especially kind of singes the eyebrows off of Tyler Perry in a very, very funny way. I'm a big proponent of listening to the cast album before you see the show, and this is just so much fun. You can hear his influences because he's young, Sondheim, Larson, Miranda. Others like Michael John Lachuza, I think you can hear a little bit. But there is no shame in that because he's very smart and he's taking all of these influences somewhere. A Strange Loop original cast recording out now.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Lindsay McKenna, what's making you happy this week?
All right, so at the very end of last month, an album came out that I have been obsessed with. It is Sturgill Simpson's Sound and Fury. It is incredible. But last night, I got to go see this incredibly special show at the Black Hat. For those of you that don't know, it's a really small venue here in D.C. It's kind of a legendary place. And he performed. Last night, 100% of the proceeds went to the Special Forces Foundation. There was an introduction from a soldier who had lost his legs in combat. And it's just really remarkable to see Sturgill Simpson sort of giving back. He's a person that was in the armed forces, so it's clearly something that's near and dear to him. For his last album, he worked with Sharon Jones's backing band, the Dap Kings. So this country-inflected sound adding horns. This time, it is all sort of like scuzzy radio music.
It's like ZZ Top, almost.
I left the show, and I told my fiancé, I really understand why my father has like a classic car thing, because I want to go home. I want to take his car, drive down the beach, and listen to this record. So actually, let's hear a little bit of Mercury in Retrograde. Mercury. Sturgill Simpson's Sound and Fury, get into it. It is so good and grimy and just so fun.
You can actually watch a long-form anime video of that album on Netflix. He collaborated with a bunch of anime directors to make very high-octane videos for all the songs on that record. So you can experience it visually on Netflix as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Lindsay McKenna. What is making me happy this week? When Gimlet Media was created a few years ago, one of their first big podcasts was Startup, which followed the creation of Gimlet Media. When Alex Bloomberg was starting this company, they were very candid on Startup about the difficulties of starting the company. As you may know, earlier this year, Gimlet was bought by Spotify. And so in the seasons since that first season of Startup, they have tried to tell stories other than the story of Gimlet, and it hasn't been very successful to me. I've never been able to get into another season of Startup besides the one that was about Gimlet. So for the final season of Startup, they are coming back with a brief season that is about the transition from, you know, when Gimlet was bought by Spotify. And it starts with an episode that is about how dire things had gotten at Gimlet, which I didn't really expect them to be as open about as they were. But the idea that sort of you start a company, it's a huge success, and then you get purchased because of its huge success is not purely necessarily what happens. It's a really, really interesting look inside this company, that first episode is. There are a couple more episodes coming. Again, it's the new season of Startup. You can find that, obviously, wherever you get your podcasts. And that is definitely making me happy and curious. And I have so many thoughts. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon and Lindsay at Lindsay McKay. That's LYNDSEYMCK. You can follow producer Emmanuel Johnson at Emmanuel_speaks. You can follow our other producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Putting a little mustard on the credits this week. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin from Morning Edition, and I'm here to tell you about something really cool. NPR is launching this new series. It is called Off Script, and it's where presidential candidates sit down with two voters for frank conversations about the issues. First up, Beto O'Rourke.
Should we not pursue public policy or legislation for fear of the current composition of the courts? My answer to that is no.
Watch the full interview on npr.org/offscript.